I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Good morning, good morning, good morning. You want to know what I've been doing this week? Well, I'll tell you what I've been doing. I've been researching the history of research on personalities. I'm trying to understand what was the whole background of personality concepts. Now, if you go way back to, I think it was Hippocrates, he came up, there are four traits, and I may have the names wrong, but he thought they were associated with blood types, like choleric or phlegmatic, So that was, I don't know, 2,000 years ago. Then about 300 years ago, there was a man named Schiller that did some work on it. And then in 1920, a man named Jung, I think it was Carl Jung, J-U-N-G or J-U-N-T-G. Anyway, he writes a book on it, Theory of Personalities and Different Things. Well, it turns out I downloaded one of the early copies of the book, and it turns out he admits it wasn't a scientific approach. In other words, he didn't do any scientific analysis. He said it was based on, and I believe he was located in Switzerland, by the way, he said, my analysis is based on experiential learning. It was the number of people that I visited over the years who were sick. In fact, he used the term sick, and I'm thinking, yeah, he was a mental health psychologist. So based on his group of sick people that he found, he came up with another, with a personality trait difference. And he also came up with, you know, three or four basic traits. Then there wasn't much done, except in about 5 years later, a lady by the name of, I believe it was Myers, and her daughter, I think, is Briggs, or I may have a reverse. But anyway, Myers-Briggs, this mother-daughter group, put out a report in the 50s about personality traits. And it's pretty popular today, the Myers-Briggs test. It's, you know, you come up with letters like I'm an ENTJ or you an INTS and different things like that. It's a good program. I've given it to probably 1,000 people, and everybody likes it, thinks it's accurate. But the whole Myers-Briggs concept, interestingly enough, was started around World War II. Apparently, in World War II, there was many, many women entering the workforce. Of course, the men were fighting, so the women were starting to do all sorts of traditionally male-held jobs. So Myers-Briggs developed this method of analyzing women to make sure they were in the right job. That was actually how it started. This is what I read anyway. So Myers-Briggs later in the 50s then published a report called the Myers-Briggs Handbook. And for the next 40 or 50 years, it was a popular one until about 1970, when some guy came out and developed a similar one called DISC, D-I-S-C. But that's basically there, you know, a few hundred years of research on personalities. And that's about it. Most of them will admit none of these were scientific studies. They were experiential. They interviewed, you know, a couple of hundred people and based on that determined these traits. So it's kind of interesting that something as important as personality really has resisted scientific research. And I admit it's difficult because most people want to predict your personality and then predict how successful you'll be. And they want to take your personality at age 15, determine, you know, how much money you'll make at age 60. And of course, there are many, many more parameters that are involved. But in any event, we try to match personalities. We do that in our software program too. We have a set of personalities that CEOs have. And you can take our test and determine how close you are to other CEOs. But it turns out that the personality of a CEO of a company is not a lot different than the personality of a warehouse worker in some cases. So personalities may not be a great predictor. But, and here's a thought I want to leave with you this week. Think all week about your own personality and how it affects your relationships with other people. Most people would agree 100% that a personality affects relationships. It affects your wife, your girlfriend, your job, whatever activity you have, your clients, getting new business, that your personality is important in that activity. I think I mentioned to you, I just finished this mediation course over to Johnson County Community College. And the number one thing they want mediators to understand is their own self-awareness. In other words, be aware of your own personality and how it affects the way you ask questions. I've been accused, and I think correctly so, when I ask questions, it sounds like interrogation. But I don't mean it like that, but that's my personality controlling the way I ask the questions. Now, clearly, you can ask the questions differently, that they're less intimidating, less sounding like interrogation, and more like just fundamental discovery. For me, when I ask a question, I always mean the same thing. I'm just discovering things. I'm not accusing you of doing anything. I'm not assuming you did something, but I am discovering facts around it. But again, the method of answering, of asking the question, the way the question is asked, and the tone can be very intimidating and sound like interrogation. So this week, think about your own personality and how you adjust it for the personality of the other person. Or do you? Most people don't. They know their own personality, and they can assess or size up the other person's personality to some degree, but don't make an adjustment. They do not make an adjustment. And the adjustment I'm talking about is the adjustment in communications. I can have a conversation with a person with my personality, and we can both interrogate each other, and we don't take it personally. It's just a matter of aggressive discovery. But if I have a discussion with another person, a person who is, let's say, a strong listener, a person who has strong conciliatory traits, they approach questions much differently. And they listen for tone, and they listen for body language, and they listen for assumptions behind the question. You know many of these people. You ask them a question, and they start off with an answer that's a totally different answer to your question. What time is it? Well, I don't know. It's midday, and I left the office about an hour ago. I don't know. Wait a minute. You have a watch on, right? Yes. Why don't you look at it? Oh, it's 12:30. You have different ways of people responding to questions. I have a person that I know who's what I call a conciliatory person, very empathetic toward people. And if I ask him a question, he'll go for 2 minutes, and I finally have to say, just answer the question. It's kind of harsh, I know, but I don't know all the other things that's behind it. It's like he's thinking out loud until he gets to my answer. My question might only require a binary answer, and if he wants to disclaim it, later language, that's fine. The point I'm really getting at is that we don't generally adjust our communication method as a function of our own personality and the personality of the receiver. But clearly, great communications require that level of adjustment. I'm going to digress just for a second. I found a new piece of technology this week that I want to pass on. Now, I can dictate, by the way, into Microsoft Word, and the transcription will come up in front of me, and then I can edit it. And I can use Nuance Communications, but I got turned on to one this week called Otter, OTTER. If you've heard of it, then you don't need to listen to the next 45 seconds. But I'm totally impressed. I took one of my old podcasts, 15-minute long podcast. I uploaded it to the Otter program. And literally in 2 minutes, it all came back completely transcribed. Now, I can put time notes in it. I can adjust for different speakers. There's many things I can do. But I was impressed with the accuracy of it. Now, I know, audio to print technology is coming along fast, but I was totally impressed with Otter, O-T-T-E-R. I enrolled in it. I took the premium version. It's $10 a month. And since I do a lot of podcasting, if I want to convert those to a print format for a small book, it's easy to do. Now, I know there are other ways to do it, but I can tell you, in terms of features, this Otter looks pretty good. And the people that wrote it, it turns out, lived only 3 blocks from me where I lived in Los Altos, California. Yeah, the Los Altos area, there are just a lot of smart people live there. I guess the people that weren't smart moved away. Some days I wish I was still there. But the point is, take a look at Otter, O-T-T-E-R. I think you'll be impressed with how well it works. Now, back to personalities. The reason I keep thinking about it is because I keep watching TV. I watch Tucker Carlson, or I listen to Klavan on the podcast radio. And then I'm getting ready to see the debates this week. And I think if when you're watching the debates Tuesday night, you look at how they answer a question as a function of their personality, it'll make more sense to you why people with divergent or totally different personalities don't communicate well. They simply don't. They don't think the same way. Now, this is not an IQ issue. It's not even an emotional quotient issue. It's what I call, it's the next wave. The next wave, you know, now that we've kicked off the SATs and got rid of the IQ tests and all the various admission tests for college, and we then moved into the emotional quotient, the EQ, I think we're going to move into a new phase of communications, and it's going to be the personality quotient, the PQ. I think it's finally going to help explain the fundamental problem with communications. It's not that one person is bad and one person is good. It's not that one person has better language than another person, although that might be part of it. It's more about, we deliver our messages embedded within our personality style. It's embedded in there. Now, I'm not saying it's DNA. I'm not saying you're born with it. I don't know any of those answers to those excellent questions. But at some point, we have this personality. And you see it all the time in the way a person asks a question, the way a receiver receives the question, and then the answer. So on Tuesday night, when you're drilled to your TV watching the debate, presuming that Biden doesn't get COVID-19 between now and then, listen for the impact of a question. No, not the impact. Listen for the delivery of a question as a function of personality. And the answer. Now, that includes Chris Wallace. He has a personality. Now, it may be vanilla. It may be dry. He may be able to control it. But we all have a personality. And I'll kind of call it a personality bias. We're biased in the way we ask a question, because the way we ask a question is embedded in our personality. The way we receive a question and answer it, that method is embedded in our personality. I want you to think about that this week. It's not a lecture, but think about it. Because I think the more we think about our personality and how it affects our relationships, the better we can develop better relationships. That's all for now. Have a nice day. Have a nice weekend. Look forward to seeing the elections, or not the elections, the debates. Goodbye.